Welcome to Veterinary Advice, Animal News and Views, the place for pets and the people who love them.
Here, kitty, kitty, kitty.
Here are your hosts, practicing veterinarians Dr. Roger Welton and Dr. Karen Lewis.
Happy New Year, pet lovers, or as I should say, happy belated Happy New Year. We're about 14 days into it, but we did our best recovering from the madness of the holidays and getting together again. Dr. Karen, Happy New Year to you.
Yeah,
how are you doing?
Happy New Year. Well, we spent our New Year's Day with an emergency plumber at our house, so that's always a good time when that's how you're spending
actual
New Year's Day.
New Year's Day, we have to pay like time and a half to have him there?
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Awesome.
Lucky for you, though, you don't drink, so you were not hungover at least.
Yes, I was actually up at 7 going, woohoo.
Yes, so. Yes. I was slightly hungover on a ski slope because my son needs to ski the very second the slopes open. And like literally, the ropes are there, the ski patrol's opening, and we're skiing until the ropes go up.
Oh, God.
So couldn't be too hungover on that day. But anyway, nice to connect with you. So every year I do I can't remember when I started this, but it's top pet resolutions. I don't put a number on it because it's not always, sometimes it's just two major ones. Sometimes it's 10. This year for me, it's 4. And we're going to combine that with your resolution. But by the way, blog post is what I'm referring to. So I love your resolution, by the way, because it's very, very relevant. I completely agree with it.
It wasn't really meant to be a resolution, but we're calling it one just to kind of tie it into, this podcast.
Well, it should be a resolution, though. I would have thrown it in there.
Honestly, you're right, because you could resolve to not kill your cat. So there you go. So
that's a great resolution to have. So, let's call that number 5 for sure. But yours, it made a whole article, right? So it's a lot of information. And I would encourage you to go to vetchick.com to check out one very large resolution. Not very large, but in comparison to mine, mine are just short paragraphs and mostly venting. I just mostly kind of bitch and complain. but they are resolutions nonetheless, things that you should stop doing for the most part. So why don't we start with yours? Because it is the most involved.
And it is also something you should stop doing. So, to kind of fit with your theme of things that you shouldn't be doing. Now, I did a whole article on essential oils and cats, and I didn't want to write this article. I have clients who have been asking me about it for months, and I'm always just like, I don't know. I actually have a technician who, started selling, I think, essential oils. Cue the eye roll. I'm just so cynical about life and everything. So anyway, but there is actually documented instances, multiple enough to create a pattern, of essential oils being toxic to cats. And dogs, not so much. I've actually had dogs who the owners doused with lavender so much that we're gagging from being within 5 feet of the dog. I don't even know how the dog's nose did it, but they weren't, going into liver failure and having seizures and all this stuff like these cats are doing. Mm-hmm. So I wrote the article about, is it safe to diffuse essential oils around cats? And the answer was a big, definite, possibly, maybe, perhaps, maybe you shouldn't. Because if you want to diffuse in your house, I don't know if you want me to go into the whole biology of it, but it's an oil, so it's a fat, and the biological chemistry term is a lipid. Well, the cell membrane of all of our cells is something called a phospholipid bilayer, so these lipids can kind of fuse to the membrane of your cell, and they get absorbed very easily in skin and lung and everything like that. Well, so it gets inhaled, absorbed, if you, God forbid, put it on your cat, which most people don't. But if you're doing a candle that has essential oil smell or anything like lotion, that's fine because that just is more the smell. The real risk comes from if you're diffusing it, which actually sends these little microparticles of oil into the air. And if you have a diffuser set up right by where your cat eats or its bed or something like that, that's where you have the toxicity, because you have these oils going into the air, and what goes up must come down. So then they're landing on whatever's nearby, which could be your cat, and then your cat grooms himself, and, well, he's just ingested it. Or, like you said, the food, the water, the bed they lay in, and it can even get absorbed through their skin. So basically, if you want to diffuse essential oils and you want to do it downstairs and your cat's upstairs, you know, or like have a good distance, then cool. But otherwise, I would say, you know, let's just err on the side of caution and not risk our cat's health and life.
Yeah, I think one of the good points you made in the article is that cat livers are not made that great. They're not great detoxifiers. In fact, they can go without eating for just a day or two. And in the process of just harvesting their own body fat for energy, get fatty deposits on their liver that make them turn yellow and severely sick, and we're putting feeding tubes in them to reverse the negative energy balance to save their liver. So the other thing, and I had an article about this some time ago as well, that but it was more about secondhand smoke, but essential oils were included in the article, and that everything is gravity dependent. So the concentration of these things are going to be far greater down by your feet than they are up by your head. Well, who lives by our feet? And as you commented in pre-show, so the Great Danes are probably better off than anybody, but yeah. The cats are kind of screwed. They're down there, you know, and I fully agree with the article. You know, just take it easy with the essential oils if you have a cat. Good resolution to have.
Have you seen any essential oil toxicities come into your clinic with like the tremors, the seizures, the liver toxicity, any of those that we've seen reported?
I have not. Have you?
No, because all my clients are awesome and they ask me first before they diffuse essential oils.
Lucky you.
And I tell them, crab, no. And then maybe if they are, they just aren't admitting it to me anymore. So
yeah, now I do see, though, these mystery liver diseases that have no explanation. You know, 1.5-year-old, 2-year-old cat with raging liver disease, and why.
Exactly.
So there's probably more than we realize. I don't know if we're always asking the right questions. I think as veterinarians, we need to start asking, you know, because how many sick livers do you see a week in cats? I lose count sometimes. You know, their livers are always sick, you know, and especially because they have this interlinked system, you know, that term triaditis.
Mm-hmm.
Where the pancreas is sick, it can make the liver and gallbladder sick, and if the gallbladder is sick, it can make the pancreas and liver sick, and if the liver is sick, it can make the pancreas, and I mean, and even if the upper GI is sick, it can make all three sick. So, like, those organs are so intimately oriented in a cat. I'm not going to get into the physiology of that. I think we've covered triaditis at some point. It's not even a technical term.
Yeah, really good on that. There's a good glazing you just did.
Yeah, it's glaze. But the bottom line is that I don't think a day goes by that I don't see some form of liver disease in cats. So I think we've got to start asking the question, do you blow essential oils on a regular basis? Veterinarians and vet techs out there.
The fancy word diffuse.
I'm sorry.
You have to be schmancy.
Diffuse. Yes, my apologies. Hey, yeah. So, you know, a lot of our listeners are actually vet techs. You know, if you look at a lot of our mail that we get, it's definitely vet techs. And ton of them, actually, and a lot of them vet tech students. So please advise your vets. Ask this question. You know, sick cat, yellow cat, do you diffuse essential oils on a regular basis? I almost said blow again.
No.
So, great resolution to have. Another one is one that we've touched on already, so we don't have to harp on it too much, but get over the grain-free. Just stop. Stop it. Stop the grain-free. Not only is there no proven, not one proven shred of evidence that it makes our pets healthier with the exception of like 1 in 10,000 animals, if that, that actually has a grain sensitive disease. There's no evidence that shows that pets are generally healthier on grain free. However, Dr. Karen, we discussed in a recent episode that there is ample evidence that it actually may be quite the opposite, that it's actually quite harmful. You want to expand on that for a moment?
Yeah, and Did we do a whole podcast on this? But yeah,
we're going to touch on it.
And
we're going to sum up.
Yeah, well, and so there's a specific heart condition, and we used to think, and we're still figuring this out. We're still kind of wading through this, so this might actually change in a month. But as of now, we're realizing we used to think it was taurine and grain-free, and now we're like, well, we have dogs who are on what we call boutique diets, which weren't necessarily grain-free, but they're just different kinds of poor diets that people buy because they have brilliant marketing and they think it's more natural, and they sell them in what I call the yuppie puppy food stores. And
PetSmart now, unfortunately, it's happening.
And it hasn't even mainstream. Yeah. So I don't know if I've ever told you this story. Maybe I didn't. If I did, stop me. But I, you know, being a blogger, I was advertising when I was first getting started on freelance stuff on a couple of freelance websites. Like, I won't name them. But anyway, I actually got a contact. They were from a different country. They had invented a dog food, and they needed a veterinarian to sign off on it. And they were asking me, the not nutrition specialist, random veterinary blogger. And obviously, if they're asking me, they had created this whole dog food without a veterinarian, because if they had someone helping them, they would have had that person sign off on it. And it was, hey, we'll pay you a couple hundred dollars, just, you know, approve this food. I was like, well, first of all, I was like, no. But I was also terrified, because I was like, oh my God, this is, and they can say vet approved, you know, because I mean, I'm not a nutrition specialist. I could look at it and be like, it's dog food, you know, but in terms of like calculating the exact level of every nutrient based on an ingredient list and based on a recipe, not an ingredient list, but a recipe, and making sure it's processed correctly and where are they getting the ingredients from. I mean, there's a lot involved, you know.
Yeah, and what's the integrity of the ingredients and nutrients after you cook them?
Yeah, exactly. How are they processed? How are they stored? I mean, like, it's not just, oh, here's the recipe of dog food we're going to make. And that's kind of what they wanted to give me and me say, oh, that looks good. I'm like, guys, this is super involved. That's why people are specialists in nutrition, because there's a lot. So, and it would take months and months of time and not worth $200 or whatever ridiculously low amount they're going to pay me. So anyway, it was a sick, disturbing indication of where the dog food industry is, that there's companies just popping up making dog food with chicken as the first ingredient or whatever it is, you know, mm-hmm. And they'll find some vet to be like, oh, sure, I'll sign off on this, you know, and not care and take the money and run. And that's, now we have all these dogs who are having this heart failure because of all these dog foods. So I'm sure glad I didn't sign off on that, because it probably is one that's causing heart failure now, ironically.
Probably is, yeah.
I don't know the name of it. I wish I would have remembered, just so I could be extra bitter and cynical, but maybe I'm glad I don't.
Yeah, so, they might be a big name and you might get sued, you know.
And I actually don't know who it was anymore. It was so many years ago.
I tried to avoid talking about big names. I don't need to get sued. But you know, the up until the end of 2017... To me, the two biggest criteria, and let's talk about just food in general real quick, the two biggest criteria of a good pet food company: having a veterinary, at least one veterinary clinical nutritionist on staff, and actually doing feeding trials before you put a food out. Those are two very important things. As of 2017, there's only three companies that did that.
Yeah, because hardly anybody does feeding trials because they're expensive and they're time consuming.
And I see why they're expensive. I visited the Royal Canin facility, which they have three veterinary clinical nutritionists and a huge compound just for feeding trials. It's amazing. And that's got to be expensive as heck, all the staff there and taking care of the dogs and making sure the cats and they're played with. And I mean, I can't imagine what this campus must cost this company. But they're one of them. Hills is another. And Purina.
Mm-hmm.
That was it. Blue Buffalo just hired their first clinical nutritionist in 2018, so this year passed.
And that person used to work for a competing pet food company.
For Hills.
I wasn't going to name it.
It's okay. It's all right. It's common knowledge.
Okay.
You know what? Sue me, not Karen, if you know there's a problem there. So they at least have one, and rumor has it, Dr. Karen, that they hired this clinical nutritionist mostly because they want to go into the prescription diet.
Oh, absolutely. Doing all these hokey prescription diets now, yes. Yeah.
Like with tapioca in them, because, you know, that's very natural. All right. Next topic. Should we talk about breeders and medical advice?
Oh, God.
So that's my next one.
Yeah, well, and you're, yeah. And honestly, I don't have as much problem as you, maybe because I'm a smaller practice because I'm house call, and I have a very intimate relationship with my clients. And I don't have know the trouble I did when I worked in a clinic of, well, the breeder said this, and uh-huh. the breeder said that. And if now it's more of, will you look at this paper the breeder gave me and tell me what you think? Which I appreciate that, as opposed to, oh, well, the breeder said this, so you're wrong. And yeah, those of you who know me, and I'm sure from listening to this podcast enough, you know that I'm not one who beats around the bush. So, you know, people have asked me stuff. I'm like, no, nope, that breeder is an idiot. Next question. No, nope, that's total bullshit. Next question.
Yeah.
And I actually, I was told by management once that I went, quote, overboard when they brought me their AKC, or no, what was like American Pet Dog Registry or some stupid registry, and I told them that they could use it to clean up the vomit in the car. Because
that's all it's worth.
For, and
that, or wipe the pet's butt with it.
And it. I'm like, dude, but it's not very absorbent, but you try, you know. Anyway, but yeah, so... But yeah, but so people know that if they ask, they're gonna hear it, you know.
Yeah, you know what? I don't take issue with, like, they say, well, you know, I'm wondering about that vaccine because my breeder says blah blah blah,
or only give one half of the vaccine.
Yeah,
or
only one half.
Don't give it through a full moon.
Titrate it. Yeah. So my problem is when I say, no, it's actually completely inaccurate. The safety of the vaccine is, and I'm using an example, there's a lot of bad advice, and vaccines are only one of them. But,
yeah.
You know, it's the safety of it, I can't remember the last time I had a reaction. However, I can remember the last time I actually saw the disease in a dog or cat die from it.
Yeah.
And so I strongly recommend it, and I do it in my own dogs. I don't know, I really got to talk to my breeder. And I just want to say to them, which I don't, luckily, not a lot of my clients listen to this podcast. So I just want to say, you know what? Take your file, stick it up where you know where, and leave me alone. Stay out of my life. Don't waste my time. And go to your breeder for medicine.
Yeah,
why are you even here? Your breeder knows everything.
I'm like, well, then go have your breeder, you know, talk to them about buying heartworm preventative and getting your dog spayed, and just have them do all that, because apparently just do it all.
They know everything. So just, you know, why are you bothering with me? And so I'm going to read this statement from my article real quick. I got it from a Facebook meme. But it's, you know, it's a little over the top, but it's a little far off the mark. I'm sorry. It's not too far off the mark. And it's, I wrote this. I once saw a meme on Facebook stating that going to your breeder for veterinary medical advice is like going to a pimp for gynecological advice.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
And then I wrote, while it is a bit over the top, as I would consider only about 95% of breeders pimps, it is not too far off the mark. So clearly I love breeders. Hey, 5% of you out there that might be listening to the show that are good breeders and actually defer to people who are trained medically and support that, I'm not talking about you.
Yeah, there are some good ones.
The rest
out
of
there,
you suck and don't even bother with my blog or my podcast.
Yeah, because, I mean, they're trying to learn something and they won't because they know everything already. So, yes.
Yeah, it's like, why bother? They wouldn't even be listening to us, Karen.
Nope.
So, next resolution. So, that resolution, you know, well, you were a molecular biology major before you were a veterinarian. I was a biochemistry major before I was a veterinarian. And your breeder probably wasn't even a science major if they even graduated high school. That's debatable. You never know. But they do have the expertise to put two horny animals together to copulate and make offspring. Bravo, bravo. You are an expert.
Hey, they had a good website.
That's true.
Yes.
Okay, let's give a third expertise there that has nothing to do with medical health. But anyway...
But they had a good website. They have to be legit.
True. And if they're right. in Missouri, they're definitely great.
Oh, yes. Yeah, living where I live, I'm just like, oh, just dear God. I don't even.
Oozing with sarcasm there. So my number three is please stop overfeeding your pet. And I think this is the most consistent one I think I've stated every year. Because as much as we beat the drum, Karen, they keep getting fatter. What do you got to say about that?
Yeah, well, again, this is another advantage of house calls where they can swear to me that they only feed this much food, indicated with the thumb and index finger. And then you go and look at the bowl they're putting it in, and you're like, what? So, and I've told stories before about how I've measured the actual food in the bowl, and people were shocked at how much they're actually feeding their dog. So, yeah, I have that, which is nice. Or I can say, well, show me the cup of the one cup of food, and it's like the 7-Eleven big gulp cup, you know, is the one cup. So there's a lot of just, and the thing is, there's no intent to deceive. Like, they're not trying to lie. They're honestly like, it's a cup. There's no malicious intent here, you know? At least with my clients, because when I show, because I actually carry 8-ounce measuring cups with me and give them out. And they're honestly like, oh, holy crap, I feel so stupid. And I'm like, well, no, don't feel stupid. It is a cup. Correct the English word, you know. But it contains a liquid. It could, you know. But yeah, and that's what I found is it's just, they honestly don't realize it. And my parents are just as guilty. Now, an offshoot of that is the little dogs who people swear she never eats. I can't get her to eat. These little picky dogs, I offer her everything. I offer her every different kind of canned food, every different kind of sauce, every different everything, and I just can't get her to eat. Well, the dog is not skinny. So, obviously, we're eating, but we also don't realize how little these tiny little 5- and 6-pound dogs need to eat. And we feel, I'm like, so, you know, your dog isn't overeating. They're eating, but you just feel they should eat more. But, and then they're always trying to push them to eat more. So then they make them fat with their good intentions. And it's like, your dog needs like a quarter cup of food a day, maybe. And
yeah. Yeah. It's really misguided love is what it is.
It has the best of intentions. And that's intentions. Whenever I meet a client, I always step back and I'm like, okay, Karen, look at their intent. And 99.9% of the time, the intent was great.
Yeah.
You know, no matter what the outcome, how disastrous it was. The coconut oil inside the dog's ear. I'm like, oh my God. So yeah.
Ooh, that's coconut oil.
Yeah.
I'm glad that fad's kind of tapering off.
You know, yeah.
Yeah. I think that's how we met.
Yeah, we did. It was coconut oil brought us together. So, hey.
Seems like forever ago, but that's awesome. You know, case in point, look, my Labrador puppy has this epileptoid condition. Epileptoid means an epilepsy-like condition. It's such a mild case, but I can't leave her in my kennel with my other lab when I go away because the excitement of the kennel and being away from home sets off her condition. So I leave the lab puppy with my mom, which she's, you know, huge animal lover. So is my dad. And I get her name's Stella, and I get back. And I learned that Stella just had to have her dog food supplemented with scrambled eggs every morning because she likes it.
Yeah.
My mom said, you know, she's looking at us so longingly while we're eating scrambled eggs. I thought, you know what? Let me make her some eggs too. So, you know, no malintent.
Yeah, but you just, at the same time, when the dog gets like horribly ill and is miserable, you're like, seriously, then you feel bad because, you know, like, oh, you're the one who made the dog sick, and I'll say it. I'm like, whose fault is it? And they sheepishly raise their hand, and they're like, me.
Yeah.
But.
Scrambled eggs. So, hey, take it easy. It's misguided love. And in most cases, especially if you are like me and own Labradors, there is no amount of food that's going to satiate that creature. They will literally eat till they explode.
Yes. Oh, dachshunds, too, let me tell you.
Beagles.
And they're like, but he always wants more. I'm like, you could literally feed him the bag.
The bag. Plus a box of donuts.
He would jump in the bag and eat his way out and still want another bag. I mean, you just can't. Yeah.
Bulldogs, pit bulls. I mean, they love to eat. Especially the females, by the way. The females love their comfort food. The spayed females. Boy, do they love their comfort food.
Oh, yeah.
They'll never stop. So the other thing is, you know, and this is getting really, to me, very important, good quality pet insurance. And again, I think this is another consistent one over the last few years for me as far as resolutions. You know, by the way, I never looked back to last year, the previous year, because I want to be fresh and unbiased and just do the year in review and what's most important as a practicing veterinarian that I see. And, you know, we all know the economy's been good for a while, but the economy has not, the growth of our economy is not really, the wage growth is not keeping pace with the growth of the economy. And most certainly the wage growth is not keeping pace with the increased cost of veterinary medicine each year, which is quantified by an astounding 4 to 6%. That exceeds inflation, folks. So if you think your movie ticket goes up every year by, you know, an inflationary measure, your veterinary medicine bill is going up by even greater than that every year. And it's that even happened through the darn recession, you know, the worst economic recession of my generation. And it still went up 4 to 6% every year. And I don't think that's going to stop anytime soon. It's not because Dr. Karen and I are greedy. We're not greedy people. I mean, there's some greedy veterinarians, but, you know, most of us are not greedy. It's because every year my main reference lab, and I will not mention them by name, but they increase their fees 5 to 6%. And I'm on a preferred contract. And the vendors that sell us the medicines that we need to treat your pets go up by 4 to 6% a year. You know, our contract, you know, I have now 10 computers in my office that are all networked on a central server. We can't manage that. So I need this company to come in and manage my network, because they go down, we're crippled. That goes up every year. So, and taxes go up every year. All this stuff goes up every year. So, you know, it's just the reality of things. And at some point, and I've called it the veterinary critical mass, at some point you're going to see the quality of veterinary medicine go down for your average person, not because it's not there, but because they simply can't reach for that echelon of medicine because it's just completely unaffordable. So protect yourself with good pet insurance. You got anything to expand on that?
I'm going to tell you, I'm a horrible business owner. I haven't raised my prices for 4 years.
Ooh.
Well, I mean, I raise prices on like certain products. Like if they raise the price on me, I don't have a choice, you know?
Right.
But even like when the lab raises prices a buck or two, I'm like, you know what? I'm not changing it. So I don't know. Just because I'm house call, so I'm a little bit higher. But yet when people realize how much they're getting for it, they're like, oh, my God, this is actually a really good deal. And I don't know. I mean, I probably should raise them this year because it's been 4 years. I mean, yeah. When you tell anybody that, they're like, you what? But I'm like, I still am making a living and paying my techs and everybody's happy, you know, so. But now that I bought a building and I'm, you know, hemorrhaging money right and left, this might be the year that I decide to finally do what everybody else has been recommending for years.
Yeah, the facilities costs do kill you, because you got to power it. You have to repair it. You got to pay taxes on it. And that is a big difference maker, I would say, that, you know, for me, the facilities costs are probably 11% of my total expenses every year. That's a lot of money, you know, yeah. And so the more those go up, the more it costs to fix my plumbing or electricity or my roof or anything that goes wrong. The biggest thing for me here in Florida, my darn air conditioners. I have four 4,000 pound units.
Wow.
That those go down, you cannot function in Florida in the summer.
Mm-mm.
You're literally like, it's an emergency. There's like on-call air conditioning services, you know, it's crazy. So, you know, it's hard to get ventilation when it's 98 degrees outside. You open your windows and what's that going to do?
Yeah.
Not a whole lot. So yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that if we want to stay in business, we have to offset the cost in our pricing. And so the best way to combat that is to have good pet insurance. Now, I want to preface that with, not all pet insurance is created equal. So I'm not going to throw out any brands to you, because
well, policies by the company are equal too. You have to look at the policy, you know,
true.
There's companies with better reputations than others, but then you can get a crap policy from a good company, you know,
true.
Or probably a decent policy from a crap company. So it's hard. People ask me about it, I'm like, I don't know. You let me know when you pick one.
my recommendation and what I found, so my animal hospital is AHA accredited. So it's accredited by the American Animal Hospital Association. That's kind of our one of our governing bodies, but where it's different from the American Veterinary Medical Association. It's a AHA's a voluntary accreditation, which means that you volunteer for the audit where they come in and they basically prove that you're doing things at a university standard. The reason that's important is because it's all about quality. And so the reason I bring this up is not to brag about the hospital, which I am very proud of, by the way, that I, you know, we went through the audit process, took 2 years. But it's to basically, and I don't know how much experience you have with this, but generally something that AHA recommends is going to be good. And so AHA has certain pet insurance that they recommend.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say go to the American Animal Hospital Association. I believe it's aha.org. But just
careful.
What's that?
No, because some of those I tried going. I went to AHA something, and it was a very adult website.
Oh, okay, all right. So just Google American Animal Hospital Association.
I don't want to start from that. I'm like
AHA.
I guess it was AHA. But
AHA. Oh, thank you for the advice. Okay, so yes, just Google American Animal Hospital Association, and. You know, most of the things in life they're going to recommend, including veterinary clinics, by the way, you can go there if you move to a new place looking for a good vet. Not all AHA accredited clinics are the best necessarily, but it's a good starting place. But that's a good recommendation for pet insurance. And I'll leave it at that because I don't want to get into the, sifting through different kinds, because I really become a little bit ignorant of it. The reason being is there was one that I thought was phenomenal, and they were quite good for a few years. Actually, there's been two. I'm not going to mention them by name, but when the original one that was big, they became terrible because they got bought up by Blue Cross Blue Shield. Mm-hmm. And then they went to hell in a handbasket once it got bought up by a human pet insurance company. But then there was one that resisted the temptation to get bought by any human insurance company, and they started doing some shady things, like your deductible, rather than be one deductible for the whole year, it was one deductible per disease.
Which, oh God!
And that was a policy that changed in the fine print each year as owners started to renew their premiums. And here I was recommending it, and people were like, "Do you realize they're doing this?" And I'm like, "Oh, they're done. Pull the brochures.
Yeah,
it's over." So just be careful.
Well, and also one thing about pet insurance too, a lot of people are like, do you accept blah, blah, blah pet insurance? I'm like, it's not up to me. Pet insurance reimburses you, but you still have to cough up the money. So it's not great for if your dog needs $5,000 emergency surgery, you still have to come up with the $5,000 and they'll reimburse you. But that is kind of a deal breaker for a lot of people. They're like, oh, well, that's the problem. I'm like, well, exactly. It's not like they just swoop in and pay the bill and you're not out any money. You're out for a while. Hopefully you'll be reimbursed, but you still have to come up with that. That's a big deal, you know?
It's a very big deal. And you don't necessarily know up front whether or not you're going to get reimbursed, right? Because they're going to come through the medical record and all that.
Yep. And so just it's food for thought. And that's
how
they
also take up to 60 days.
None of them that bill veterinarians directly. As far as I know, none of them that bill veterinarians directly.
There's one.
There is. Okay.
Yeah, but it's one of the exact one I was just talking about that I'm not recommending anymore. So
you're like, no.
Yeah. They actually will pay everything minus deductible up front before the procedure. So all the clients on the hook for is the deductible for on the day, but then they started pulling their shady practices. And now, I'm sorry, you're done. As far as I'm concerned, it's once you start pulling that kind of stuff. But I'll tell you, I have a great, great experience recently. There was a pet insurance company that covered stem cell therapy for a poodle.
Wow.
Yeah. Isn't that amazing? Stem cell therapy and PRP, and the poodle's really responding to it, and they freaking covered it minus 20%. They covered 80% of it.
Yeah, not bad. Cause that's like what, a grand that cost them probably?
The stem cell, cause they also did a dental at the same time.
Oh, geez.
So their total bill was like, I don't know, well north of $2,000, and they covered 80% of that. So,
wow, nice.
Yeah. So that's very cool. Bill of $2,000, 80% covered.
Yeah.
That's not a bad deal. So, but that's all I got on pet resolutions. Any miscellaneous stuff you want to throw in there?
No, I mean, I think the total we had five, and I think those are five good ones to consider, definitely. I mean, we could go, we could come up with 100 if we really wanted to, but these are the biggest, probably some of the more ranty ones.
Yeah.
Which, and I know lately, especially you, Dr. Roger, have really been, you know, promoting the pet insurance more than I am. Honestly, I mean, yeah, it's a good idea. I'm not a fan because the headache it costs me, because I'm a little practice, it's mainly just me, and they're like, the pet insurance needs this, and they need you to write a letter about this, and can you send 15 copies of this in different colors to, and I'm just like, F me. So, and I try to smile, I'm like, gladly, but you know, I'm like, this is just a giant, it's taking me away from clients that need me doing all this crap. But once, I mean, I have a receptionist I've hired, and once I get smart and start utilizing her more, then I'll be dealing with it less, and I'll punt it onto her and be like, here, have fun.
So. Yeah. I mean, in the end, that's what it comes down to for me, is that all I'm doing is filling out the diagnosis. I'm writing the diagnosis.
Yep.
And signing.
Yeah.
And the record.
I'll do that all the live long day.
Yeah.
But it's this, you know, we need another letter explaining whatever. So, but you know, that's life. Part of being a small practice. So anyway, but yeah, so basically, if you just want to pick one of our resolutions and roll with it, cool. If you are doing essential oils and you have dogs, probably not as huge of a deal. If you are diffusing essential oils and you have a cat, I would strongly reconsider that. I don't know. Any other parting thoughts you got there?
No, I'd love to get some email feedback on our resolutions and see what your thoughts are on them, especially if you're a breeder.
Yeah, because usually we have a couple emails, and this time we didn't, and we were kind of hurt. So
yeah, I was feeling a little less flattered tonight.
Well, we podcasted in God knows how long, so hey, you know,
it's the holidays, right? That's our excuse. Yep.
Well, and I, you know, kind of bought a building and I'm trying to do
I'm
that.
I'm working on buying a second practice because, you know, I need more to do.
Because one just wasn't enough, yeah. So, anyway, it's amazing, this stuff. And it was so funny, went to my other doctor who helps me out. I said something today, I was like, oh my God, more on my plate. And she just laughed out loud, and she was like, you know what, you'll just put even more on your plate once that's done. I'm like, yeah, damn it, you're right. Yeah. But it's like, here I am trying to, you know, I'm stressed about this building, and she's like, well, then you'll just do something else. I'm like, yeah, I'll start a shelter. Something else just because I can. So
yeah, that's just part of the DNA of who we are.
It sucks.
Well, so, wonderful to connect with you. Let's try to keep this going on a regular basis, as we say every time.
Yeah, I think you had a resolution last year to podcast every week, and I think I laughed out loud when I was like, like
yeah, let's aim for twice a month.
Yeah, I think that's good. Yeah.
It's realistic. It's for you and I lately, it's setting our goals high, honestly.
Actually, that's very high for us, the way. And just so you listeners know, like, we were supposed to do this last week, and every day was like, oh, crap, I can't do it. Can you do it tomorrow? And then the next one, I'd be like, oh, I'd be like, I'm not even home yet, and it's 8 o'clock at night. You know, I mean, it was just, so we do try. Again, back to that thing I was saying about clients where we have the best intentions.
Yes. So yes. I fell asleep on my couch at 7:50 last night.
Yes.
That was another night. at any rate, well, nice to talk to everybody. Happy New Year, everyone. Good luck with your pets this year.
Bye, guys.